This is Afternoons with Georgia Steins on ABC Radio Canberra.
Klaus Moyer was a talented artist. By all accounts, he was also a very gifted educator, and he dedicated more than half a century to glasswork. He arrived in Australia with his wife, Bridget, back in 1982. He was the inaugural head of glass at the School of Art in Canberra, later to become part of the ANU. And part of his obituary on the ANU website actually says that it's hard to imagine a world without him because Klaus changed what glass could be, how it was taught, and along the way he touched everyone he met. He was an outlier, an innovator, and a leader in equal measure. Before he died, Klaus gave Nola Anderson complete access to his entire personal papers, amongst other things. And the result is a very beautiful book. It's called Glass, The Life and Art of Klaus Moyer. And Canberra-based Nola Anderson, who you might know also as the author of the Australian War Memorial, Treasures from a Century of Collecting, she's actually here on Afternoons to talk to us a little bit about Klaus and also this book. Hello to you, Nola.
Hello, Georgia, and thank you for the invitation to join you this afternoon.
Oh, the book is very beautiful from what I've seen so far. Can you just take me back to when you and Klaus first met? What do you remember of that?
Oh, it was a great time. It was 1982, and Klaus had just come, as you'd mentioned, to open the glass workshop at the Canberra School of Art. And I had started teaching art history there and had done a little bit of teaching in the glass workshop, a little bit of art history. And Klaus encouraged me to write more on glass, for which I'm eternally grateful for, because he's a very inspiring person, but he also inspired people to use their own ideas and their own initiative. And he would create opportunities both for me in opening up opportunities to write on glass and for his students to exhibit on glass. He was such a generous and inspiring person that it was a great opportunity to meet him then. And then we reconnected, always stayed in touch, but reconnected years later in about 2013 to collaborate on the book.
What was his personality like, and I guess how it did that then in turn influence his art?
There were quite a few facets to that. And in fact, that's one of the questions that was in my mind when I started to write the book. I was fascinated to know what it was about Klaus which made his art so special. And throughout a course of discussions with Klaus over a couple of years, he revealed himself as being firstly an extremely generous person, and that had implications for his life as a teacher. He gave so much to his students, he expected a lot too. He was very generous with his colleagues in terms of sharing techniques. He was never one to not disclose how he had done something. He always felt that the more knowledge out there, the better. He was also a very self-disciplined person, and that showed through in what the qualities that he brought through to his class. It was a very exacting process that he created called kiln forming. And it took him years of trial and error, first of all, to create the process and then to perfect it and then to get that exquisite finish that he would not let a work out of his studio without. So that was, there was a lot of self-discipline there as well.
It's interesting that you say, because I've been reading a bit about him online ahead of this interview, and it's interesting you say that he was very generous, but he also expected a lot from people.
Yes. I mean, His students knew that. He would say if someone came in late, I guess they were sort of in those days a bit of a student late at night, late in the morning sort of etiquette, which Klaus did not appreciate. So he would say, well, if you're not there in the morning by 9 o'clock, I'm not there for you for the rest of the day. So
they could turn up, but they wouldn't get his attention.
Exactly. But he was a wonderful teacher at the School of Art, such that the students, even 20 years later, would still refer to him as Papa, which is the German word for father or dad. So there was a lovely warmth. He was also well known for having fantastic student parties, which were the of which other workshops were quite jealous too.
So. What do we know of his early life and the decision then to come to Australia and to Canberra?
Yes, it was. That was an interesting way of getting here. If you like, it really goes way back to his seafaring grandfather, who instilled, I guess, in Klaus a love of exploration, new worlds, adventure. That was something that he picked up very, very early on in his youth. But then he also knew that there was some practical significance in doing an apprenticeship. He did an apprenticeship in his father's workshop. It was a small glass grinding workshop in Hamburg. To him, that was work. That was what the next step that he took. But at the same time, he then, with his very inquisitive mind, would then look into what was going on in the art world as well. I mean, the art world was miles away from anything that he was doing at his apprenticeship in his late teens, but he knew that there was something there. I mean, one of the chapters I called Sensuk, which is searching for something, which epitomized those early years. So he developed his own take on glass in the end, drawing on all those influences, set up his studio. But because he was just so determined that skills should be shared, he was looking around then for what is the next step. By the 1980s, he was an internationally renowned artist. He was well known in the States. He exhibited in the States and in Europe. Where would he go next? He didn't feel a great affinity with the university colleges in the United States. They were very much art-based. He didn't feel an affinity with the technical schools in Germany because he didn't find those as creative as enough. And then Udo Selbach, who was the director of the Canberra School of Art in the early 1980s, was looking around for someone to set up the workshop loosely based on a Bauhaus style art school where you have workshops headed by masters of the field. He knew of Klaus's work. Klaus had an affinity with that sense of Bauhaus style teaching, a master and students. And so it was a happy fit when Udo asked Klaus to come out and set up the workshop. But he said, yes, I will, brought out his equipment, and off he went.
Did you get a sense from, I guess, what he gave you access to, Nola, did you get a sense of what their initial thoughts of Canberra was and what they thought of the culture here?
Yes, well, it was lovely because as I mentioned, it was a time to explore, to find new worlds. But both he and Brigitte, his wife, thought, well, we didn't quite understand what this place was going to be like. Particularly Canberra, when they arrived, was quite a new experience for them when they'd been thinking of beaches and Australian summers and that sort of thing. But look, they grew to love it, particularly when they set up their home in Canberra. Then they moved to a studio after 10 years down on the south coast at Wappingo. They would talk about driving across the Monaro Plains and the sweep of the landscape and how inspiring that was. He loved the light. In fact, one of the first series that he produced in Australia was called New Horizons. It was a take on this is my new horizon. But as far as I see, there is this land of sweeping hills and plains. So it was just a lovely meeting. And they both fell in love with it.
I assumed he approached you about the book, or did you approach him? How did that initial thing work?
Well, I actually approached him. And he didn't agree first up. We agreed to think about it for a while. And I think it's because it's the measure of his approach to life in that he didn't see himself as the important thing. He saw his work as important and what he was doing with his colleagues and his students. He took pride in his achievements that certainly was there, but he wasn't quite sure. The phrase that he used was, well, usually I'm the one with the megaphone, meaning he was usually the one with the microphone talking about other people. So he took a little while to think about it, but he did. Eventually he embraced it wholeheartedly, and as you'd mentioned, just so generously gave me access to his whole archive, slides that would go back to the 1960s of some of his first work, right up to the last years of his life, all the records that he's kept, exhibition catalogues. It was just a treasure trove, and again, so generous of him to make that available. Which is one of the things that makes the book so great to have worked on.
Yeah, was it daunting though, given what a big figure he was, and he loomed so large in terms of that area of art, and also in Canberra, and also you knew him?
Well, look, yes, it was daunting, but really from the point of view of wanting to do it justice. I mean, that was the daunting part. I knew it was a fantastic body of research to do, because it was really breaking new ground in this sort of writing on a glass artist. So that was the exciting part. But always in the back of my mind, it was, is this really what Klaus was doing? I never tried to say this is what he was thinking, because I don't think that's the role of a writer. But what I tried to do is present the context and the work as really evidence for, well, have a look at this and see what you think about what he was thinking and doing.
How did you choose which of his works to include? Because I can't imagine you managed to get all of them in there.
Oh, no, that was, yeah. Absolutely, that was a real painful experience. I would have loved to have included a lot more, but you can't in a book of this size. So I knew which ones had become very significant in the course of his work, so I tried to put those in. I put in ones that were, to me, really important signposts for what he was trying to do. One of my favourite was the very first mosaic bowl that he produced, and he produced it by accident. At that stage he didn't really know about the technique. He was getting cracked pieces all over the place. Finally he created this beautiful bowl, and it was bought by the Museum for Kunst und Handwerk in Hamburg, the Museum of Applied Arts in Hamburg, which was just amazing. This is the first piece he'd ever produced, and it was bought by the Museum of Applied Arts in Hamburg. And he would go on to become the most famous colourist, if I could put it that way. Everything about Klaus was brilliant colour, and there's another story related to that. But what I found most fascinating was this piece, pure white, which I thought was a lovely irony. But I mean, it's a lovely piece and a lovely signpost to what was to come. And that was done in about the mid-1970s, 75, 76.
You mentioned they're one of his early works, but where are a lot of his works today? Are they literally all around the world?
Literally all around the world. Tens of public museum collections, unknown private collections. There are some pieces I've never been able to track down. So I'm looking forward to when the people read the book, they might say, oh, I've got a piece of Klaus's work, and we can actually find a place for another piece where it's living. So that's another part of the exciting research of it.
Nola, do you have any of his work, or is the book your?
I do actually. Yeah. And I mean, there's another nice story with that. All the pieces I have were gifts from Klaus. Usually in the context of, he would say, look, I've got an exhibition, I need a catalogue essay, can you do it for me? I would never charge him for writing about his work, but he would always drop around a couple of weeks later with a piece of glass in
oh,
his
as
hand.
A gift.
As a gift.
How gorgeous. Almost like a barter, but not quite, because you weren't asking
it's
for
a
it.
Gift.
Yeah.
I wasn't, no.
I wonder how many homes in Canberra have got little gifts from Klaus from them
well,
doing things
you,
for
you
him.
Know, yes. I mean, again, that's who he was.
Yeah.
That's who he was. So I imagine there are a lot of very cherished pieces and treasures in people's collections that were gifts from Klaus too.
What do you think his lasting legacy today, you know, 5 years or so after he's passed away, what do you think he's left behind here in Canberra?
Oh gosh, so many things. I think if we talked about Canberra, it would be the tremendously professional, successful group of artists working in glass who have had some sort of interaction with Klaus. So it would be through the students when he was teaching at the art school. It might be through the Canberra Glassworks, where he was very instrumental in mentoring that and working with the artists in that context. It would be through other artists that his life has touched in Canberra. The parties, so many things that people would remember him for. I remember it for his memorial service. There were so many warm memories of what Klaus had meant to so many people that it was just lovely to see.
Well, thank you so much for telling us a little bit about the book. I really appreciate it. It's a lovely tribute. Thank you so much. Thanks, Nola.
Thanks, Georgia. Thank you.